This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Good evening, LB.
Hey, Andrew.
Wait, this is the wrong show.
Yeah.
So usually we do, together, exclusively, Vincent Price's Laugh. Again, I needed a co-host to fill in for my various co-hosts, who are a rotating peoples, who talk with me about these silly movies. So you are a good fill-in host. Oh. I don't have a co-host, it's just me and whomever, right? But you've been on this show at a grand total of 6 times. Now this would be your 7th time.
Not counting the mezzanine.
Hey, we're not talking about that movie.
Oh.
That's a good one, though. For those who don't know, that's Hudsucker Proxy. But tonight, today, right now, a few minutes ago, what did we just watch?
The Neon Demon.
I see 20 or 30 girls come in here every day. Mostly from small towns with big dreams. You're going to be great.
Look at Jessie.
Fresh meat. She has that thing.
Beauty isn't everything. It's the only thing.
Look at Jessie.
I know what I look like. Women would kill to look like this. You know what my mother used to call me? Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Look at Jessie.
Women would kill to look like this.
The Neon Demon. Neon Demon.
Now, Andrew, let me just say, this film is stunning.
Stunning.
Stunning. It's a stunner.
It's a stunner. Okay.
It's beautiful. Now, you mentioned, and I was thinking this around the same time as you vocalized it, this film would be the way to remake Suspiria.
Yeah.
It's a lot like Suspiria, which is strange because I liked this film a lot. I'm not a big fan of Suspiria. However, watching Neon Demon has got me thinking maybe I should go back and watch Suspiria again.
And see if you actually like it.
Yeah, maybe I like it.
Maybe you grew up in the time.
Yeah.
Well, because we start watching movies and experimenting with movies, because that's really what a lot of this watching is an experimentation with narrative, with structure, with presentation of images and all this stuff. So we watch these experiments and we experiment with ourselves and we realize the first time, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
Or I do really like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this has happened a few times where we've watched something and we've just had this horrible yuck reaction.
Right.
And then just to test myself later to see if maybe I missed something that first time. So it's like a year, 2 years later. I revisit that movie and it's good or it's all right. Or what was I talking about first time?
Yeah.
So this one actually we watched 2 times in a week.
Yeah, we broke the rules.
Broke the rules. Yeah, I like it.
Me too.
It is slow though.
That's true. I did take a big long nap after watching it, I think both times.
Yeah, it has a quietness to it. There's this, we're going to get into what it is, but long ago, my pal Marty and I, we made short movies. And one of our short movies was directly, for me, influenced by David Lynch and how oddly he films things. Sometimes he would focus on a thing that isn't even part of the story as the story is happening, as people are talking and whatever. So we'd do that where the camera's pushing in on a trinket or something while two people are talking, but the two people who are talking have extremely pregnant pauses, like this movie. It's almost comically pregnant pauses, for me, especially because we were doing it for a comical effect, like, hey, what are you doing?
Just standing here.
Oh, okay. How's that for pregnant? So this movie has a lot of pregnant pauses. But what the heck is this movie though? What is it about? A summary, if you please.
That's my cue. All right, it's about a teenage girl who is very pretty and wants to have a modeling career. So she moves to, what, LA?
I rolled my eyes at you. Of course they're in LA. Where do models go? Where do young starlet wannabe models go? New York or LA? And actually just LA.
Okay. So she has some professional photos taken and get signed by an agency. And we follow her through meeting various people in the industry.
Boring. Keep going.
And some really crazy things happen to her. And I think that's where I'm going to leave it at this point. We are going to be spoiling this movie.
Heavy spoilers.
So please, if you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it now. If you don't care about spoiling, keep listening.
Right. Okay. So I say boring because that's a really boring synopsis. That's happened many times in many different movies, right?
Yeah.
No big deal. First off, super interesting is how this is shot and presented.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. He's the guy behind Valhalla Rising. What? Another super boring but really interesting movie. Bronson, not boring at all.
Nope.
With Tom Hardy's in it, fully naked with a handlebar mustache and no hair on his head. And he beats dudes up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic film. Not just because he's naked. I know you're keen to that.
Oh, I don't care. I'm not one of those girls.
Oh, what girls?
You know, that are all double standardy about...
Oh, really?
People in movies.
Because, like, if it was Michael Fassbender...
I don't know who that is.
Michael Fassbender is her crush.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so he's also done a super mega hit called, well, it's a sleeper hit, really. It's called Drive. It was a big hit among the artistic, artsy designer folks on the internet.
Uh-huh, yep.
Me included. I drew a Drive-themed piece, but it was just a furry monster. Dude.
You did?
For Trover. He wanted me to do something with his beast-themed character, so I just did a Ryan Gosling version of it.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Okay.
So there's Drive, and then Only God Forgives, which is very strange and does not go where you expect it to, much like this film. And those last three have a lot in common because they're very synth heavy.
Uh-huh.
They're very colorful.
Yeah, one of the best things about this movie to me is the color palette. I love it so much.
Yeah.
The pinks, the reds, the purples, and there's mustard color that goes really, really great with this fuchsia in a lot of scenes. It's so striking.
It's like future vision of mundane, somewhat stuck in the past LA. When you get to the mundane, somewhat stuck in the past parts of the story, like the restaurants that they're in, those are old type restaurants. Uh-huh. Those aren't those slick, super modern restaurants.
Oh, right, right.
Or the motel.
Uh-huh.
So the motel is just an old motel from the 80s through the 90s, 70s even probably.
Yeah.
And it looks like it has a early 90s, maybe late 80s decor, but it works beautifully in how they shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
It's still tacky and all.
Right.
But it's beautifully done. Now, the story.
Yeah, let's get into the meat of this.
The young girl who comes to Hollywood to become a model.
She's played by Elle Fanning.
Dakota Fanning's little sister. And dare I say, the better of the two, perhaps?
I think she's a better actress.
She's definitely the one that does more interesting work.
Yeah.
And she didn't really ever play the precocious...
Right, I always hated that about Dakota Fanning.
Yeah.
When she was a kid, she always played that, I'm, you know, a 35-year-old trapped in a 10-year-old's body.
Yeah.
I always hated
that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's her role in... Exactly, her role. Like, quirky and adult.
Yeah.
Child in War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Kids aren't like that.
Yeah, it's really insincere. It comes off really insincere. Yes.
So, anyway, Elle has done many things, from really weird Francis Ford Coppola stuff. What's that movie? With Twilight? Twink Light? I don't know what it's called. Betwixt.
Twixt. It's just Twixt.
Okay. Twixt, which is just weird, and not necessarily good weird, but it's trying. So
uh-huh.
She goes for an interesting project, I think, as opposed to what's gonna make her a star or something.
Yeah.
She was in Super 8 when she was younger.
Mm-hmm.
That's a J.J. Abrams thing, lens flares galore, and what that has to do with this is they both have lots of lens flares.
Yeah.
And the same actress.
They're really pretty lens flares.
She meets a makeup artist who is infatuated with her.
Am I staring? A little. Sorry.
This makeup artist is played by Jenna Malone, who
uh-huh.
I typically do not like in movies because she's just kind of off-putting. And it started with the movie Saved.
Oh, right.
Jenna Malone is really good in this and
mm-hmm.
creepy and wrong.
Yeah.
So, she's a girl that becomes infatuated with the new pretty girl in town. Mm-hmm. She hangs out with two models. And these two models are one-time it girls, or were they ever? They act like they were, but their star's fading. What, in modeling world, at one point a girl says something about,
once you hit 21 in this industry, you're so irrelevant.
So these two girls are played by 29-year-old girls.
Uh-huh.
And they're playing about 25, 23,
25. Yeah, I was going to say 24-ish.
Yeah, so that's the age that they're playing, and they are behaving so jealously and catty.
Yeah, there's a lot of really petty, passive-aggressive.
Well, let's get to the really whacked-out stuff. So there's two models that are jealous, a makeup artist that is obsessed, and a motel manager, played by Keanu Reeves, who is absolutely creepy.
Yeah.
Seems like he's involved with human trafficking, exploitation of young teens, a pedophile, and a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly a murderer.
Right.
And boy, does he perform it well. Now, there's one character that seems to be the only redeemable character or good character, and that is not exactly her boyfriend, but
right.
He's a photographer
uh-huh.
that shoots her first portfolio, or what we... And those photos are pretty cool, but we hear some snide words about him being very amateur or something.
Christina Hendricks is the modeling agency representative, and she calls them
amateur hour. No offense.
But yeah, they're actually pretty neat.
Yeah, they are professional. They're
yeah.
slick. They look like something that would be in a print ad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's just whatever. Part of this movie is satire, I believe.
Okay.
About the modeling industry.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes and stuff like this. So, as we said, it's kind of a boring story at the beginning. Like, it's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
It gets weird, though.
Yeah. So, the first inclination that it's weird is when she meets Jenna Malone. Her character's name is Ruby.
Well, it's Jessie is the model girl.
Right, right, right.
Ruby is Jenna Malone.
Yeah. So, Ruby's watching Jessie take off her makeup, and she's telling her she's got beautiful skin, you know, like complimenting her, and then she goes over and helps her take off her makeup, which is actually like fake blood that's on her arms
yeah.
and her shoulders, and she's speaking to her in such a way that,
can you just get to LA, Jessie?
How'd you know?
You've got that look.
Oh, don't worry, honey,
that whole deer in the headlights thing is exactly what they want.
So where are you staying?
At a motel in Pasadena.
By yourself?
Mm-hmm.
What do your parents think about that?
They don't really.
Don't think, or just don't care?
They're not around anymore.
I'm sorry. Hey, you want to go somewhere?
Where?
A party?
What kind of party?
The fun kind?
If it was a man, you would be really genuinely creeped out. But since it's a woman, it's still creepy. But you kind of, at first, you're like, well, I guess it's okay, because girls can talk to each other like that sometimes.
Yeah, it's uncool. No, you can't. But it's accepted.
Yeah.
But no, no.
So that's the first thing. And I think after that, the next thing that just makes it really weird is that mountain lion.
Yes, the cougar. Now, this is really cool. This is what I was thinking about.
Okay.
So while we were watching the movie the second time in a week, Elby keeps hearing me go, ah, because my thoughts are churning as scenes are coming up, and I'm remembering them,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, whoa, oh, okay, I get it.
Wait. Your synapses are firing.
Yeah, so the cougar in the motel is obvious danger.
Right.
And it shouldn't be that way. She goes to her motel room, opens the door, and there's a monster in there.
Yeah.
She has no idea what it is. She's freaked out, and she goes to get Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Something's in my room.
What do you mean something's in your room?
I saw something in my room.
Are you high? What are you doing?
Calling the police.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Relax, okay? Mikey.
Yeah?
This lady has an unwanted guest. 212.
Mikey, open the door.
Mikey.
There's your visitor.
Call Robert is this big cat.
Yeah.
And it's totally out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in a city.
Yeah.
It's in a suburb city, but it's in a city. It's Pasadena. Why is there a big cat? Now, in Southern California, big cats do sometimes roam neighborhoods. It does happen, but it's very rare and it's totally out of place. And I don't want to get into the big old, you're out of place. You're encroaching in on the territory of a cat. I get it. Historically, that's what we did. But here, it's the city. There's no big cats. So it's analogous to her life in the fashion industry slash just the dang location with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, okay.
So
I really liked that scene when she opens the door and she sees a dark creature.
Yeah.
We can't tell what it is. My immediate first thought is that there's some kind of goblin or vampire. And she slams the door closed real quick. And I think this is like part of the best acting in the whole film that she does. Like she just like stands there in shock.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Like her face and like how she's just holding her fists. Like,
what do like, I do?
Yeah, what do I do? What is it? What? That is so real to me because that is so exactly what I would do.
Yeah.
So I'm actually a little bit disappointed
when it is
when it's a cougar and not a vampire or a goblin. But hey, it's fine.
No, it's a realistic horror. This movie is a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So far, it's not a horror movie. But the horror of seeing a very dangerous beast, it's scary. Now, because it's the kind of cat that it is, it's also, and it's dark, it's creepy too. Because how predator cats,
yeah.
Big cats move, they're slinky, and they have this really deliberate movement to how their muscles work and everything. It's beautiful and creepy at the same time when they're hunting.
Yeah.
I've always said tigers are scary, spiders are creepy. But big cats can be creepy too, especially if they're shot in this manner.
Yeah.
Because they're very creepy. So, I wrote something down. I'm just going to read it because I can't put it into my own words after I put it into my own word. The cougar in the motel is obvious danger, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be a cougar in a motel.
Right.
It's just a motel room. That's all it should be. It should be pretty safe. But it is not safe because there's this cougar. This is analogous to the exploitation of young beauty. By all accounts, we agree that there should be no predation upon anyone young or old, but especially young, for the sole reason that youth is assumed to be pure, inexperienced, and innocent. But even our intro to the young photographer, he seems sinister, because when the camera pushes in on him, his head's tilted down, and he's got kind of a furrowed brow, an eyebrow raised. He looks like a bad guy.
Uh-huh.
That plays on our preconceptions about, in particular, about men. She's laying there in this odd pose with the blood all over her, and it looks like a photo still, except it's not because the camera's pulling back, but then we see that she's mm-hmm. modeling,
yeah.
And this guy's looking at her, and that guy ends up being her photographer, and there's nothing sinister going on. It's just he's looking with intent to try to get the angle and all that, right?
Yeah.
But he looks creepy, and that's to play on her preconceptions, especially about this photographer character, who, this is the one guy that I said is the only redeemable character in the movie. He's also naive. But though he's using her for his benefit, taking photos of her and then using that in his own portfolio,
uh-huh.
It's a symbiotic relationship. There's no exploitation here.
Right.
She's using him. He's using her. It's like a work-for-hire situation. No big deal. It's not sinister at all. So the cougar, though, represents everybody else except for the girl.
Yeah, I follow.
Keanu Reeves is the obvious one.
Yeah.
That guy shouldn't exist, but he does. In a bigger scheme, Christina Hendricks is there to exploit.
When someone asks, I want you to say you're 19. Always 19. 18 is 2 on the nose.
No one's gonna believe that.
Lie so that we can benefit from your beauty.
People believe what they're told.
Yes. And so the industry at large is sinister. Specifically, these three girls are the cougar.
Ruby, Gigi, and Sarah.
Yeah, so the cougar sums up the entire movie, just the theme of the movie, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right with that.
I don't know if they intended that, but that's how I saw it.
So let's talk about beauty for a second.
It's a bigger subject than 1 second. What about it?
So this girl, Jessie, she has a type of natural beauty that a lot of people in the modeling industry are extremely jealous of. It's not uncommon, according to this film, for models to have plastic surgery done to make them look more androgynous, even.
Yeah, Gigi has a bit about this.
Well, I thought I'd get more work if I went down a cup size, so I'd look like a hanger, you know? But then my surgeon, Dr. Andrew, he pointed out a lot of other problems with my body. So I had them shape my jaw. I had a slight eyebrow lift, new nose, cheeks, inner and outer lipo. Oh, and they pinned my ears.
Right.
Because they want clothes to hang on them like a coat hanger, not to be on an actual human being.
Right. So yeah, Gigi in particular has had a lot of work done.
Yeah.
And what this film says about beauty and about the vapidness that a lot of girls have is really interesting to me.
A lot of girls have, but a lot of men perpetuate. Gus, that fashion designer, he said,
"True beauty is the highest currency we have. Without it, she would be nothing."
Right.
While the other young photographer said,
"I think you're wrong." "So are you gonna tell me that it's what's inside that counts?"
"Yeah, that's exactly what I think."
"I think beauty isn't everything, it's the only thing."
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's an actual combination of the two. Probably more inside and less outside would be a perfect combination.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as dichotomous as that, one or the other.
Beauty definitely gets you noticed, but what gets you remembered is your character.
Yeah, so at that point, when they have that conversation in the restaurant, I was just like, "You're wrong, and you're naive." But the fashion designer gives her a job over this other girl. They have to walk down a runway in their skivvies and see their form and posture. And then, "This is the face I want wearing my clothes," whatever. And Jesse gets the job over Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah flips out. And this is the absolute turn for the weird. Where,
yes.
Like, what? Well, the cougar was ominous and strange, sure. And after watching it the second time, makes sense. But this part, she cuts her hand on a piece of broken glass because Sarah freaks out and breaks a mirror. And Sarah immediately wants to suck the blood off of her hand.
Right.
Out of her wound.
Right. Like what she's supposed to be, some kind of wendigo?
Well, yeah. Like a vampire of some sort. Like a monster. Like she's behaving like she's an addict needing this or wanting this. Which makes me think, is there a past in this?
Right. That comes to a bigger head a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. So, hold on to your hats. Is there a past with this behavior, possibly? So that's weird.
And the thing is, Jesse totally deserves the job too. Jesse has such a natural way that she carries herself, and I'm not into fashion or modeling, or, you know, like, it's not really my thing that I keep up with.
I know all you wear is burlap sacks and cargo pants. That's not true either.
But it's very apparent that she's just so natural. Like, there's no other word to describe it. She's just walking so effortlessly, like, in this mock runway.
Yeah.
Whereas Sarah and the other girls, we see a couple of other girls do it. They have, like, a pretense to them.
Yeah, it's put on. They jut their hips forward. That isn't physically natural. It really isn't natural to walk that. There's no use for it except to accentuate possible curves or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or movement of a feminine body.
Right.
But, as you said, when Jesse does it, she's just walking.
And it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
So, Sarah freaks out and tries to suck her blood.
Right.
The three women get together, the obsessive girl and the two models get together, and then they end up talking about Jess being picked by this hotshot photographer, Jack.
Right, played by Desmond Harrington.
Yeah. To me, it's a really funny portrayal of a serious photographer. It's not necessarily ha-ha funny, but inside, I'm chuckling because he's so intense and so serious. And he orders everybody out of his studio.
Yeah, he makes it a closed set.
Even the makeup artist has to leave. She's not happy about that.
Nope.
And then he asks her to take off her clothes. And then he slathers her body with gold paint. And the scene is shot in such a way that's very sensual. But is it sexual?
I don't think it is.
Is he a sexual predator?
No, I don't think so. I think that he is admiring her.
Like someone would admire a sculpture.
Yeah, I don't feel like... I mean, he goes up to her. He puts the paint on her. You know, rubbing it onto her
chest,
her
and
clavicle.
Neck.
And like all these sexy spots. Like, because she has a very feminine neck. Like
she's got a very long neck.
Yeah, it's very sexy. But I don't think it's presented in a way that he's just oogling her or he's, you know, getting off on it or anything. I think really it's just he's admiring her and her skin. Like, there's a lot of talk in this movie about how beautiful her skin is.
Yeah. Now, Ruby assumes that he's doing something sexy with her, taking advantage of his power as a photographer of high status. And when she talks to the other folks, this seems to be the implication as well. And then Gigi busts.
"Jack shoots me all the time."
"That's not gonna last."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"It means your expiration date's almost due. Who wants sour milk when you can get fresh meat? Right?"
"Sarah, these girls come and go all the time. She's not special yet."
"You have to admit there is something about her."
"Like what?"
she's young and she's thin.
No, it's more than that. She has that thing.
But it's so desperate.
Right, they're really trying to justify thinking that they're not over the hill yet.
And really, they're not.
No, they're not, but...
They're beautiful women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not over the hill. This is how perverse this story is. Uh-huh. These characters, the modeling agency, everybody has this pretense that once you hit an age... a number, mm-hmm. you are no longer beautiful.
You're not important anymore. You shouldn't have attention given to you anymore. And that's what they crave. That's part of that vapidness is, I need this attention. I need this affirmation. I need you to adore me.
Mm-hmm. So what he does when he's putting the paint on her, he's actually adoring her.
Yeah.
So this is why they want him. They see him as like the pinnacle.
Right.
You get to work with this Jack guy. You get adored.
Yeah.
He's going to lift you up. You'll be adored by many.
Uh-huh.
Through his photography. Now, how they shot it with him putting the paint on her and then cutting to her just leaving the place and just being ho-hum, no big deal.
Right.
It was a good shoot.
Yeah.
He wasn't bad. And then Ruby saying,
I don't think you should be alone with him. You seem fine to me. That's not what I'm saying, Jesse.
She's putting that seed in our head and the character's head, and the character's like,
not as helpless as I look.
But our head, we're thinking, well, what a creep.
Yeah.
We become complicit in the judgment of this character who may or may not be doing anything wrong. I tend to be like you. I don't think that he's actually doing anything wrong.
No, I really don't, you know.
Situationally, I mean, like the context of it.
Yeah.
But I found that to be interesting how it was presented. It's like open-ended. Uh-huh. Did he or didn't he?
Right. Well, you know, okay, so if you're a doctor, you examine people, right?
Yeah.
And after a while, it's just a body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's body parts. It means nothing. That's kind of, to me, what photography is, or like other forms of art are. It's just a body. It's not something to necessarily sexualize, even though you're being sensual about it.
Mm-hmm. You don't think the late Leonard Nimoy was a super creep because he took photos of naked people.
No, not
He's
at
probably
all.
Like going, oh, that shadow looks really cool on that form.
Yeah, exactly. So, I do not think that Jack, the photographer, is a creepy guy.
Yeah. Okay, good. That's out of the way. He has a minor part in this story.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually also, now that we talked about it, he's not irredeemable. He's just not a character in the forefront.
Right.
Okay, so I was thinking about this in a classical story. Fairy tales or old lore and things like this, Shakespeare even. These three ladies, the jealous ones, are witches.
Uh-huh.
And I think that comes to fruition later as well.
Right.
So Keanu's character, he tries to get into Jesse's bedroom. And he, first, just before, it's like a premonition. Just before he tries to break into her bedroom, she's sleeping and she has this very sexual, without having sex, without having nudity, a sexual dream about the Keanu Reeves character taking a knife and putting it in her mouth and saying,
water. Water.
Yeah, it's really disturbing.
It seems, though, to be kind of a power thing. Follow me here. People who start gaining power and eventually have mass power tend to be submissives sexually, according to psychological reports and stuff.
Okay.
A lot of them tend to be submissive. So even in our stories and movies, True Detective and whatever, we have these moments where these high power guys are being whipped and chained and stuff like that by a dominatrix lady.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if a woman possibly is gaining this power, and she definitely is, by this time she's starting to believe that she's the bee's knees.
Yeah.
So she has this dream that she's oh so desired, and instead of just being murdered or anything, it's a sexual version. The knife is in her mouth, not in a way that's stabby, stab, stab.
No, it's used in a phallic way.
Yeah, so it's the danger that's presented, and I just think it's more symbolic about her gaining power and like that whole sexual fantasy sort of thing. And I don't know if Nicholas knew this when he was writing it, intended it that way, or if he was just being like, hey, Keanu, do something creepy.
Mm-hmm. So as she starts gaining this power, you know, okay, so we're following along with these gains that she's having in her career. She gets the shoot with Jack after signing with the agency, which apparently is hard to come by if you're new to the city.
Yeah, you're brand new, you don't get Jack.
Yeah, but she is striking enough that Jack has taken notice on her. So that's the first thing. Up until that point, she, to me, didn't look that pretty. And this is weird, okay? She looked more just kind of like a plain girl who has some softness to her.
Yeah, well, she's not jagged. She's actually not common looking. But right. She is cute, anyway.
Yeah, she has a very interesting face, obviously. When she goes to the photo shoot with Jack, and Ruby puts the makeup on her, and it's this really strange makeup where she looks like a goddess.
Yeah, she has a golden frame to her face.
Yeah, that's where it hit me, personally, like, wow, this girl is very, very pretty. Okay, from there, we go to the audition for the fashion show.
Which is where we see her move.
Right, and then the actual fashion show, where it's this very strange sequence of flashing lights and red lights.
And a Triforce Omega.
Yeah.
From Zelda. Legend of Zelda. So, no, this is a thing that keeps coming up as a motif. It's flashed before in other parts momentarily, this Triforce, and also this pyramid sort of triangular obelisk sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things are a motif, and I'm not sure what they mean.
I'm not sure either. I mean, the best that I can ascertain is that it gives her the sort of power, I guess, like we were talking about. Like, it's her exhibiting her coming into this dance as the most beautiful girl, the it girl, the girl that everyone wants to be.
Right.
And she's presented in a more and more beautiful way.
Sure.
As it goes along. So I wonder, I mean, I don't know if you experienced the same thing I did with thinking that she looked plain, and not really boring, but not that special.
No, I just think that she was more cute earlier on, and later she became more, because of makeup, pretty.
Uh-huh.
There's pretty and cute, and there's a combination of the two, and then there's pretty, and she was heading towards pretty by the end.
Okay.
Well, as far as how the makeup is done.
Well, I was kind of just feeling that the progressiveness of her attractiveness.
Yeah.
Was in direct correlation with all this attention ego. And power and ego that she's getting.
Now, there's one point where she goes on and talks to her photographer friend, not quite her boyfriend, but he feels responsible for her, which is sort of a boyfriendy thing.
Right.
They have this conversation, and she says,
I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't write, no real talent, but I'm pretty, and I can make money off pretty.
Which is interesting, too, because that's self-objectification. She's going to use her physical appearance as a means of income.
Right.
So this is a big commentary on the fashion industry and image and all that, and in particular how women possibly think about this. Would you exploit yourself being a woman if you looked in a particular way that you think would be a commodity?
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah.
To the detriment of yourself? Which is really where it's going.
That's the thing, because it's like a sacrifice that you would make, you know? There are certain qualities that make you what we think to be, you know, righteous person.
Sure.
That you would have to give up. Because once you start relying on your physical appearance.
And solely that.
And yes, you become obsessed with keeping up your physical appearance, and nothing else matters to you.
Gigi and Sarah are exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Now, Ruby isn't that character. Ruby's something else. It's Jenna Malone, who is an unconventional beauty. She's pretty. Mm-hmm. She's actually really cool looking in this film.
Yeah.
And she wears some cool clothes, and they're form-fitting a lot of times.
Yeah.
So you can see her figure, but she isn't portraying a model, just somebody who is working in that industry.
Uh-huh.
Now, here comes a big old sick spoiler. Two parts. First part, after Keanu Reeves tries to break into the hotel room, Jesse calls Ruby, asks for a place to stay. Ruby invites her over. Ulterior motives here.
Mm-hmm.
Ruby wants to seduce her, and she tries.
Mm-hmm.
And then things get rapey.
Yeah, she forces herself upon
Jesse. That's rape. That's a rape attempt. Because Jesse is like,
I said stop!
I've seen people go, oh, what? You're depicting lesbianism in a negative light. No, they're depicting a person who's a rapist.
Right.
Who is a depraved person.
Right, it really doesn't have anything to do with lesbianism.
Not really. So the follow-up to this scene is she's also not just a makeup artist for photographers, she's also a makeup artist for a mortuary.
Right.
And she finds this woman that she's going to be doing makeup on, and she proceeds to rape her corpse. It's indicated that she's doing this because she wasn't able
to be gratified
earlier
on.
This is the thing where I've read in reviews where people are objecting.
That's just so offensive.
Yes, it is. It is offensive. It's horror. It's horrible.
Right.
We're not supposed to like that this character is having a necrophilic moment with a corpse. It's desperate. It's selfish. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Further indication of what's to come.
Yeah.
I believe it's a necessary scene in the film.
I agree with you. I wasn't offended by it, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't disturbed by it.
You're saying the knee-jerk, this doesn't belong in my movie!
Right,
offended.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
I'm not
like in a natural sense, of course you're offended by necrophilia.
Well, yeah.
Right. So, I'm just doing that for semantics.
Yeah,
sake.
It didn't turn me off to the movie.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's an important reveal in Ruby's character.
Not just that she was, let's say, a generic rapist, because that's what she is at first. Yeah. She's a creep, she's creeping on her, and then she's a generic rapist, which are things that are analogous to if a guy was a creep and creeping on her.
Yeah.
But now she goes a step further.
And something's very, very wrong with her.
Yeah. So this also is something about the witchiness, I think. The old fable witches. Possibly they are in some sort of way supernatural. A supernatural sort of, not explicitly witches. I'm just talking like literarily witches. The roles that witches play in stories.
Okay. This film does play a lot with the line of supernatural and realism. What world does this take place in?
David Lynch's Lost Highway world. I don't know. Let's just get to the end.
Yeah, okay.
The end is, Jessie has this speech where she's fully embraced her ego.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely narcissistic.
Uh-huh.
You know what my mother used to call me? Dangerous.
Yeah.
She was right. I am dangerous. I know what I look like. What's wrong with that anyway? Women would kill to look like this. They carve and stuff and inject themselves, hoping, praying that one day they'll look like a second-rate version of me.
And what she's saying is pretty much fact. It's not delivered in a way that's so gloaty. It's sincere how she's saying it, which means she believes these things.
Yes. So she's had this complete transformation from small town, humble girl to
neon demon. She's the neon demon.
Aha!
This comes from Nicholas Winding Refn on the commentary, which I was only able to find information about, not listen to. But he said that she has progressed to be the neon demon. Neon, shining bright. Demon, her ego, the negative version of accepting all that crap.
Do you think she's, like, sucking in everyone else's energy?
I don't think it goes that far supernaturally.
Okay.
Now, the supernatural stuff, though, the symbols.
The triangles?
I think if we're going to go with old folklore and all that stuff, so the triangles and the pyramids, and when she goes into the pyramid and starts licking the mirror and all that stuff, it's a major transformation moment.
Yeah.
I think it's more like that's the gingerbread house. And she's stuffing. She doesn't know that she's doing something or accepting this horrible bad stuff upon herself. So she's turning into this, you know, kind of like a stuffed Hansel or Gretel pig to be roasted in the oven.
Yeah.
Roasted by, one, possibly the industry just going to exploit. But definitely these three girls, because what they end up doing is murdering her.
Yeah.
Just chasing around with a knife, and you're like, what? Oh, it went there? What? Okay, so they push her over and into an empty pool, and she dies bleeding. Next scene, they're showering the blood off of themselves.
Right, because they have bathed in her blood, Elizabeth Bathory style.
So, Ruby is still in the bathtub full of blood.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, whoa, they bled her out, and they danced in her blood, and they whatever. They did more than that. The next scene, you have a photo shoot with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Gigi with the job. And this is the scene where the girl said,
once you hit 21 in this industry, you're so irrelevant.
Right.
So that girl who said that is a model and she's got the job. It's not working.
Jack doesn't like her.
Gigi's already set up.
And Sarah's just there waiting, supporting her friend.
She's supporting Gigi. Jack frustratedly comes over and sees Sarah and then decides to use her and fires the other girl. So she goes up and they're all done up and modelly and everything, and Gigi starts to lose it. She starts to get queasy and sick.
Yeah.
Goes to the break room and then pukes up an eyeball.
So we learn that they have actually consumed Jessie as well in attempt to gain her beauty and power and strength. And
this is where I'm thinking witchcraft.
Yeah.
And the symbols are a version of like enticement sort of thing to basically disarm the victim.
Uh-huh.
So that the victim is none the wiser that they're going to be devoured.
Right.
So, she picks up the eyeball. Now, here's something interesting I found. Gigi, she says, I can't have her in me anymore.
I need to get her out of me. I need to get her out of me.
Yeah.
And so she cuts herself and dies almost immediately. And Sarah leans over, picks up the eyeball, which is, so far as we know, the last remains of Jesse, and eats it.
Just slurps it right down.
After it's been puked up out of somebody else's stomach. She doesn't eat Gigi.
That's true.
She eats the last remnant of... She doesn't even go for blood from Gigi.
No.
Nothing.
Well, you know why? It's because Gigi is not a natural beauty.
She's false.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be rather interesting that she goes for that.
Yep.
So, big controversy about this movie as well, as people were refusing to call it a horror movie?
Yeah. Oh, it's a thriller.
Okay.
It's a drama.
All right.
I think it's pretty horrific.
Yeah, that too.
It has cannibalism in it and...
Necrophilia.
Necrophilia and violence and...
Stabby, stab, stabs.
Yeah. I mean, not all horror movies have to have violence. It's not like the number one component. Like, you can have a thriller with violence as well, but like violence plus assumed witchcraft.
Yeah, the themes in this story as well.
Yeah, this is definitely a horror movie. And like we said earlier, it seems a lot like Suspiria. Now, you know that Suspiria is getting a remake.
Yes.
Which, whatever, I don't really care. Except, maybe it doesn't really need to be remade.
We have Neon Demon.
We have Neon Demon, which is...
a good successor to that kind of story.
Yeah, it's like a perfectly good modern day...
It feels like an Italian film.
Yes.
It, from the 70s, made by Mario Bava, or Argento, or a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
More visually Bava, thematically Argento, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a need for a new Suspiria at all. Like, I know Nicholas is an auteur. He's on his own. He does his own movies. I don't think he does remakes.
Right.
So, if you were to try to get somebody to remake Suspiria, try to get him to do it.
Yeah, for real. Now, what I was thinking, okay, we've been looking into the Criterion Collection a lot lately. Like, it's like come up a lot lately in our lives. I was thinking about, why haven't they released any Nicholas Winding Refn movies? Because I think that they really deserve...
They would fit.
...the kind of treatment. I mean, if they're going to release every single Noah Baumbach movie and every single Wes Anderson movie, they should do something from Nicholas Winding Refn.
Something. They don't have to do his whole catalog. He's got other movies that are spread in Europe. He did a series in the 90s, which I haven't seen most of, called Pusher, Mads Mikkelsen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three of them. Those are, I think, a different visual style. And I think he developed this visual style when he did Drive, I think.
Yeah.
The music on this is great, too.
Yeah.
He's a good successor, I think, to David Lynch, without doing solely, expressly, what David Lynch does. David Lynch has his own trademark in what he does, and it's always, oh, that's a David Lynch thing. That feels and looks like a David Lynch thing. This doesn't seem like he's aping David Lynch, but he's a latter contemporary of, so that they kind of parallel in certain ways, just in tone, at least.
In tone and in vision.
And now Badalamenti works with David Lynch on the music, on most of his scores, if not all of them. Nicholas works with Cliff Martinez. They worked on the last three movies together, including this one, so Drive, Only God Forgives, and this one. So I think it's he's got his Badalamenti, so I think they're analogous to each other in different time periods. So, do you recommend this film? This is what I always ask.
Yeah, I think that everybody should watch it.
Your mom should watch it. Exclusively a Scooby-Doo lady should watch it.
Well, it doesn't have any cussing in it, so...
No, it is pretty horrific.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't talk about some elements in it. There's stuff that we left out, but we watched it twice in a week.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's rare that we do that.
That's true.
We'll visit it a year later, but not twice in a week.
Yeah. It is slow. It is deliberate. So don't watch it if you're tired already.
That sucks.
Don't watch it if you're in the mood for a light comedy.
Don't do that.
Watch it when you're like open to having something be interesting and challenge what you are thinking.
Like, we watched it twice to unravel themes in it, and it works that way. It benefited us to do that.
Yeah.
We're neither film scholars nor are we a couple of dummies, so... somewhere in between. Thank you, Elby, for joining me again. You recommend it. I recommend it. Not to our parents.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night. Was it me just walking?
It's a stunner. Burlap sacks and cargo pants.
And none of it recorded.